Welcome to this week's Casterbris Podcast with a K, available on Casterbris, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and Audio Boo.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Casterbris Podcast with a K, with me, Christian Corley, and him, James McLean.
Hello.
Hello, how are you?
Yeah, not bad. Second time this week.
Second time this week. Yeah. Yes, dear listener, you join us as we scratch our heads as to the bizarreness of yesterday's podcast, which we recorded, which we're going to try and do something a bit different today. But generally, basically what happened is we recorded the podcast, and when it came to editing, I didn't pay too much attention to the size of the podcast. I just checked at the beginning that it recorded and checked at the end that it recorded. And indeed, it did record those two portions. We didn't record the bit in the middle. So basically, when I was reviewing it to do the show notes, James was talking eloquently, I might add, James, it was very good to listen to, about Kate O'Mara. And the cut was amazingly, it was seamless. And he finished the sentence talking about Jacqueline Hill in Megalos. So... yeah, it didn't go very well, basically, because that was right at the end of the podcast. It wasn't because James is deranged or anything. He is deranged, but it wasn't because of that. So, yeah, that's where we ended up, basically. We're having to do the podcast again. So we thought we'd do a video, and we've done this before, haven't we, James, when the podcast hasn't worked quite well, and we've tried doing it again, and it's kind of a bit drab.
What, doing it again, it's ended up being
Yeah,
a bit
doing
crap.
It the second time. We haven't really had the feel for it the second time.
Yeah, at the same time, it can go the other way. You can sometimes find that... I mean, I was kind of thinking, actually, yesterday, that we were sort of waffling a bit. So, in a sense, I'm kind
that
of
wouldn't
glad...
be the first time.
No, would it? No, it certainly wouldn't. I thought we could sort of streamline it. And so far, we've done quite the opposite. So, I'm quite impressed with that.
Okay, fair enough. Well, we are live, so if anyone has anything they want to say to us, there are means of doing so in this system, just messages or whatever. We have no viewers at the moment, you'll be interested to know, James, but I don't think that should put us off in any way. And of course, this will be providing an audio version for the podcast normally, so if you are listening to this later on iTunes or on Audio Boo or Stitcher.com and you're wondering what the hell we're talking about, this podcast started off as a video, and we stripped the audio off and gave it, provided it to you to listen to as you would normally, basically. So, in the last few days, on Sunday, we got the sad news that Kate O'Mara had passed away. Kate O'Mara played the Rani in Doctor Who in 1985 and 1987 in the two serials, The Mark of the Rani and The Time of the Rani. Or was it just Time of the Rani? Time and the Rani, beg your pardon. And again, Four Dimensions in Time in 1993. Kind of maybe best skipping over that particular fact. She was an interesting Doctor Who villain, as we discussed previously, and just a general gist. She wasn't the master, was she? She kind of gets him portrayed as a female master, but that's not the case at all, is it, James?
No, well, it's sort of like deja vu, this, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
No, he says spontaneously. No, she was... As I think, oh God, when we do these double podcasts, when we're redoing podcasts, you end up having to sort of prefix every sentence with, as I said before, which is stupid because no one knows what we said.
No one knows, yeah. I've just done it
not
myself.
Not anyone's hearing this at the moment. Yeah, I mean, I think the Rani was, in a lot of ways, where the master should have been in the 80s and ended up not being because she was a very amoral character, which I think the master in Delgado's form was... close to being amoral. There was a bit of an agenda on him, but he by and large was sort of he wasn't evil for evil's sake. He had his own plans, and whether you fitted in or you didn't really just depended on whether you died or not. It wasn't any particular, he didn't have a particular grudge against you when he would suffocate you in a leather sofa. It was just simply expedient. And the Rani was a little more like that, in the sense that all she wanted to do was her bloody nasty experiments, and if you were in the way of the bloody nasty experiments, you'd have to be moved out of the way. And that was kind of refreshing from where the Master was going, where the Master was becoming very linear. You know, where the Doctor went, the Master would probably be there just beforehand with a slightly sillier moustache or a, you know, some sort of vague disguise.
dressed as a scarecrow.
Dressed as a scarecrow. He was becoming the Count of Monte Cristo in terms of his disguises, with his little rubber noses and the like. And he sort of lost a lot of dignity. So the Rani sort of brought a sort of dignity back to the renegade Time Lords, I guess. And then she totally lost it by the next episode in Time of the Rani, where she dressed up as Mel, the Doctor's companion. And, you know, just went down the master route, which is kind of funny since they were both written by the same people, that they would manage to do one so well and then screw up the same character by doing exactly what the show was doing to the master.
Yes, yes, that is.
So yeah, no, it's a great shame she died. Great shame she passed away, as is with everyone. Kind of shocking somehow. I don't know why. I can't but say I think about her a lot, but somehow her going seems to be quite a. I don't know.
You don't have any Rani posters on your wall then?
No, I've never had any real urges to have Rani posters on my wall.
She was a nice looking girl in the older. I mean, she wasn't an unattractive one, but she was quite stunning in the early days in the two Hammer movies that she did and around that sort of time. Before she came out of the family.
You know, she was striking out to get Dynasty as well.
Yes.
I mean, that's not, you know, that was a place for quite stunning characters. But, yeah, I mean, Colin Baker's been on Twitter sort of saying what a loss it's been. She was a very strong English actor with strong roots in character, you know, in character acting and method, I think. So, yeah, I think it's a shame that they've lost her. 74 is very young these days.
I think it's young these days, yeah. I'm not sure it's very young, I suppose. Depends how you look at it, I suppose, isn't it? It does make you wonder, as you get older, exactly what sort of... Is old actually that old? Or is, you know, people are forgetting things, and, you know, with Alzheimer's, or whether they've got another condition that's causing them to forget something, whether diabetes comes into play or whatever, whether these illnesses are really... have been contributing to people thinking that they're old before they really are old.
Oh, absolutely. And then you get people like Tom Baker, who's older, and comes across as vibrant and as young as he ever was. So it is to a certain degree a state of mind, but state of mind is dominated by your body, unfortunately.
Indeed. And we should also mention that director Derek Martin has recently passed away last week. He was director of 10th Planet, Evil of the Daleks, and Spearhead from Space, among others.
The Ice Warriors.
The Ice Warriors, yes. I think Galaxy 4 as well.
Yeah, Galaxy 4.
Yeah, so he's got a bit of an incomplete back catalogue there for us to still catch up on. So we did chat about him, and I think it's worth mentioning. I do like that little story that I recalled yesterday, where they got very excited when they did the film version of Spearhead from Space. They wondered if there was a chance that they might be able to get away with it permanently across the whole series, rather than just mounting a film version to get around to industrial action. And there was a feeling for a short time that they might be able to sell Doctor Who to the USA, which would have created an entirely new Doctor Who, basically. It would have been... Because we're talking Series 7, so we're talking that kind of action-oriented era of Doctor Who, which is kind of very... kind of straight-laced in some ways, less wacky than things like Three Doctors and Carnival of Monsters, for instance.
Yeah, interestingly enough, I mean, now, when they look back at it, they tend to say that they went sort of back to the space things because they felt that there was a certain amount of a lack of distinction of what they could do with the Doctor on Earth.
Yeah.
Terence Dick sort of saying that he felt it was either, you know, evil mastermind plan or, well, that was pretty much it when it came to the Earth Adventures. Or Alien Invasion, yes. Yeah. So... I mean, I tend to feel that sort of comment is, I don't want to say lazy, because, you know, he's a professional writer, but, I mean, you know, you could say, well, Law and Order is about, you know, they have a case and then it goes to court. You know, how many times can you do that? Well, actually, you can probably do it about, like, 20 years worth. So, you know, everything has a certain amount of... restrictions and longevity, I guess. I mean, I'm sure they could have done that sort of Series 7 thing for a long time if they wanted. I'm not suggesting that he couldn't, but I can understand it's obviously, as soon as you're locked into any format, you're locked. But that's life, isn't it? That's what soaps do. Coronation Street, 50 years of sitting on the same street. You think, how did you make storylines that long?
Well, it has changed, Coronation Street. It has changed because it was kind of, there was a time, you know, like the 1970s. This is one of those topics we need Gareth Cavanagh on for because he's a big fan of Coronation Street prior to 1990. And then there's this kind of late 1970s Coronation Street, which is kind of whimsical in some ways, but the characterization is really, really strong.
Mm.
Whereas nowadays, you know, when you've got the additional episodes, that's kind of, they've expanded the format really, rather than change, they've expanded the format and there's less of the whimsical stuff. There's a lot more serious stuff. And there's more locations in the show as well than there was 30, 40 years ago.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's fair enough. I mean, it has had to change. But, I mean, to a certain degree, there could be an argument whether change has come out of necessity to change the format, or change has come sort of purely out of a sort of an evolutionary process as the show has changed, more money's been provided,
mm-hmm.
you know, the actual idea. I mean, Doctor Who could still change, but still be within that constraint of being an Earth-based show. In the same way, you know, like say X-Files. X-Files never left the planet through its 9 seasons or whatever it had. You know, it was pretty much the same thing for 9 series. It evolved slightly, but it remained constricted to its same. So yeah, I think Doctor Who could have done quite well, but. Yeah, it's an interesting question.
You could have had Terry Nation in charge. You could have taken. He was trying to fuck his Daleks around the same time, wasn't he?
Well, I was thinking, if Terry Nation was in charge, we could have had the same story over and over and over, because that's what he used to do, sell the same story to them over and over and over. So he'd been fitting, very fitting.
Back to Law and Order.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, right. Well, so what we're going to do this time around is basically I'm going to surprise James with news items that aren't quite live yet, that might be talking about later on today on the website. Because, you know, we need to make this a bit edgy. So,
right.
James, this morning, you may like this.
Mm-hmm.
I'll do what I can to send you the image. Basically, there has been a surprise item appearing in the BBC shop today that has then vanished shortly afterwards.
Right.
I'm just going to message this over to you. It's a DVD.
It is
a DVD for a missing serial. I'm just sending that over to you via Skype, so if you just answer the beep.
Thank you.
Basically what it is, ladies and gentlemen, it's on the BBC shop this morning, and it is April Fool's Day, so we are aware that it may not be entirely serious, but that the speed with which it was taken down suggests someone might have made a mistake. A listing for a Marco Polo DVD was issued on the BBC shop website. Now we have a screen grab. I'd like to thank Paul G for passing this over to us. Apparently it originates with designer Damien May.
So what do you want me to say about this apart from the fact that it's just an April Fool's, isn't it?
Well, is it an April Fool's, though? That's the question. Is it an April Fool's? It's appeared today. It is April the 1st today. But at the same time, I mean, there's a release date of, I think it's difficult to say because of pixelization. It could be the 12th, 15th, or 19th of May. From what I can see, it makes sense in terms of a listing. And it disappeared. It wasn't online for very long at all. So is it genuine?
I don't know, maybe it is. I mean, we know it's sort of all coming. Oh, I don't know. You have put me on the spot here. I would say the date of it seems very timely, yet at the same time, I don't know. I mean, you could get into a lot of problems trying to pre-order. So, I think it probably is genuine. I'm going to go with genuine.
You're going to go with genuine? Oh, so it's like Jukebox Jury now, hit or miss, isn't it?
Yes, I think it's a hit. I think, because as we know, we've had the Mirror in November, the Mirror for reporting on Marco Polo, and we've had in various sources that Marco Polo has potentially been found. I think this is probably a hit. I think it was someone set it live accidentally. And it's just, it being April Fool's Day is a real problem.
It is.
But at the same time,
At the same time.
At the same time, it's, I don't know, sometimes this happens, doesn't it? You know, April Fool's Day, things happen on April Fool's Day which aren't April Fool's.
Yes, and of course, April Fool's Day is just a day, isn't it? It's just another day. The April Fool aspect of it is just like a small element. So it doesn't have, everything that goes on April Fool's Day isn't an April Fool. This isn't an April Fool. What you and I are doing now isn't an April Fool. It's an actual recording.
Absolutely.
If it was an April Fool, we'd probably be scratching our heads wondering why we weren't getting more work, to be honest.
Interestingly enough, you know, if you read it, it is true. You've got commentaries listed there with Russell Ford and Mark Eden.
Right.
Capola.
Anything from Waris Hussein?
No. Oh, yes, and direct Waris Hussein, yes, sir. Very blurry, obviously, because it's quite a small...
Now, we do know that he was told that there is... that it had been rediscovered. So, basically, Doctor Who website, if you're watching... Probably not, but if you are, and you've come to the wrong place for some lessons, but it'd be worth spacing out some time in the coming weeks, because it would seem that we're going to have another mad Doctor Who episodes found scenario taking place again.
Best episode to find, if it is. I can't think of one that I would want to see more.
It's certainly in my top list, yeah, definitely, yeah. Power and Evil, I would like to see properly. And Dalek's Master Plan as well.
Yeah. I just kind of feel that Marco Polo... Yeah, very good. I just feel that Marco Polo won't let people down.
Mm-hmm.
From listening to the audio adaption and everything and seeing Squeak, I think it will be good. I think those early historicals always work very well. Evil and Power, I have a feeling, will be slightly disappointing. I think Power will be more disappointing than people realise. The audio strikes me that there is a lot of backwards and forth between two, point A, point B, running around. And I don't think it's going to be the marvel that people think it's going to be. Okay. I think people are excited, get excited about it, because it's obviously the first moments of Troughton, which are what people really, that's what people are excited about.
Do you think that's all they're excited about?
Well, I mean, the story isn't that mind-blowing. I know people seem to think it is, but it isn't. I mean, yes, I mean, okay, there is the unusualness of the nice Dalek. You know, would you care for some tea sort of thing, but...
Yeah,
you're still talking about four episodes. And, you know, as I said, listening to the audio adaptation, it didn't blow me away. I think it'd be an interesting story. It'd be great to see another Dalek story, and it'd be fascinating to see, you know, Patrick Troughton so early on. But, yeah, no, I'm not that... I'm not that excited over the Power. Oh. If it exists, it probably doesn't. If it doesn't, that's cool, isn't it? Because it's not there. Marco Polo is. Hurrah!
Yeah. All right. Okay. Well, we'll see how it turns out. There might be something else as well. They might be releasing another pair.
Even the Daleks and Power Daleks. Yeah.
Well, no, we've got Marco Polo as one of them, so there might be.
Something oh, you mean as a pair there. Within it? So yeah.
We're Fear and Enemy of the World last time, so maybe we're going to do a similar thing again. Mm. Which would save time in the long run. So let's not get into the problems of questions of whether they're holding episodes. I nearly said whoring episodes then, which possibly in some respects they are.
I would like it if they returned the proper version of Time of the Rani.
Really?
Not the joke April Fool's one that they released.
What happens in the real one?
Well, the real one is it's a far more credible story. Colin Baker crash lands on a planet. You don't find out who the enemy is until end of episode one, and it's the Rani. There is a big struggle to kill Mel. Both sides want to kill her. The Doctor tries harder, fails, falls over, and regenerates. It's a far more kooky and exciting story.
I see.
Yeah. And then halfway through, Pip and Jane Baker come on and they apologise. yeah, halfway through episode three, at the beginning it stops, everyone takes a bow and they come on and they apologise for the ultimate foe and they walk off.
Sounds more like a Monty Python sketch.
It does a bit, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
It'll be better than Time of the Rani.
It's getting a bit silly now.
It's all very exciting. I like the fact that we have all these missing adventure rumours and conversations on these podcasts, which people are generally interested in, but we're not trying to just drum it up. This stuff is constantly flowing. So it's not us trying to constantly keep talking about missing adventures. Every week there is a new little bit.
Yes.
Omni rumor, or whatever you want to call it, and that's kind of cool. You don't have to milk this subject. It's like a cow that is just dripping constantly.
Yeah, it milks itself, doesn't it?
Exactly.
That's a farmer's dream, isn't it?
It would be, wouldn't it? So what's next on the agenda?
It's April Fool's Day, as we've already mentioned, and we have we've had our own April Fool on Casterbus today. Have you seen it?
No.
You haven't? Okay, we.
I've not been to Casterbus today.
You have been on Casterbus today? That's disgusting.
Well, I'm not editor, I don't need to. I'm not bound by this necessity to seek out Doctor Who news
indeed
every day.
Indeed, you are not, and isn't that a good thing for everyone? So Doctor Who gets a new four-legged friend. Move over, K9. There's a new four-legged companion coming to the TARDIS. And I'd like to thank Drew Boynton for putting this together and then uploading it and then telling me about it about 3 hours later. Leaving me scratching my head last night as to what the heck was going on. I thought he'd lost it, to be honest with you. I thought he'd gone demented. It hadn't occurred to me what day it was today.
No, well, it hadn't to me. I mean, I suppose we've just got more busier lives than others.
Well, quite possibly, yes. So, basically, he says, Peter Capaldi's love of classic Doctor Who has shone through once again as the artist convinced the show's bosses to give his Doctor a new companion, similar to that famous tin dog. The new companion will be a cyborg cat, inventively named Fuzz-E.
Fuzz-E. That should have been the clue.
Yes, I know. It's a clever piece of writing. We've done a few April Fool's jokes on Casterbus over the years.
What was last year? Sorry, I can't remember.
I don't think we did one last year. I think what I've tried to do is do one every other year. However, I'm pretty certain that the year before we had a story in which a new companion was announced. And the new companion, there we go, exclusive, a new companion. This was from 2012, April the 1st, 2012, yeah. And we did an April Fonts as well one year. It was the same year. Yeah, that's right, yeah. So we did exclusive, a second companion in 2012. In addition to the casting of Jen Louise Coleman last month, we can exclusively reveal that a second, as yet unknown character has been cast in Doctor Who Series 7, played by perennial kitchen sink drama actress Justine Alexander. The Doctor's second female companion adds some new Roman spice to the time travelling. Alexander plays Ariel Verdana, a young bald girl from ancient Rome and Britain. You can see what's going on here, can't you? And there's a couple more clues in there. This new Latin character whose experiences in the TARDIS with the Doctor and his other female companion could veer from Gothic to fantasy and take them to places as far apart as New York, Chicago, Geneva and Scarrow. The photo I used was actually a photo of my sister. For the new second companion, and so that was that. Basically, I'm gonna have to disappear for a moment. Two ticks.
How awkward, leaving just me. Hi. It's unusual for me to be bereft of words, but today I am bereft of words. I can't think of anything to fill this gap. I mean, if you're on the audio, I can't do something on the video because you won't be able to see it or hear it. You'll be able to hear it, but you won't be able to see it. And if you're on the video, it's going to be particularly awkward. I mean,
hello there. This is a bit of a problem for doing a live podcast, isn't it? Basically, I've got a poorly little girl today, so she's kind of in the next room, and I was hoping she's been very good. You know, we've got quite a way through this podcast without any incidents. But of course, if I have to leave, then poor old James is left on his own because there's no Brian to chat with. Brian the celebrity, of course. Brian the celebrity.
Oh, yeah, him.
With his Wizard World convention panel appearances and his launching his movies and things.
And his sonic screwdrivers. And
sonic screwdrivers at Custer's, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Well, no one's ever going to hear my satirical TSA line now, are they?
From
yesterday. No. Because it's gone now. It's gone.
No.
I'm quite upset about that. Paul McGann. is no, actually, no. Before Paul Bungan, Sean Pertwee. I was in relation to the next topic we're going to discuss. I did a bit of a search. I just like to do it. You know how sometimes you just search for something just to see if it's a thing or not.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So yesterday I searched for has Sean Pertwee auditioned for Doctor Who? And someone was claiming that he was a choice in 2005.
Right.
Have you heard that before?
No.
I haven't heard it before either. So I don't know whether it's just...
Where did the person get his claims from?
Well, exactly. Exactly. So there's no reason to believe them, really.
Because one thing I've noticed about the internet is you don't actually have to say the truth.
Well, that's...
When
that
you
is
write something.
True. Yeah.
There's no ownership for truth.
As anyone would attest to having read our April Fool story.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And absolutely.
Yeah. It's the way propaganda works, isn't it? If you have the authority of something looking like it is an authoritative source, then people will believe it.
Absolutely. Which is why on adverts you get Carol Vorderman appearing and the like.
Well, I'll draw the line there.
Well, that's the whole idea.
Yeah, but
absolutely. She is a... People see her as being more of a scientific mind than a voiceover, even though they've got just doing exactly the same job. It's a scary world we live in that sort of sense.
Absolutely. Okay. So, we'll forget that, but we'll stick with Sean Pertwee, who he's been popping up over the last few days. He was on the Chris Evans Breakfast Show a couple of days ago on Radio 2 with Paul McGann. And he's also spoken recently about Peter Capaldi. Basically, we describe the article as Pertwee family backs stupendous Capaldi. I think he's going to bring some real gravitas and weight, which only comes with age. Taking nothing away from Matt, who I thought was great, I just think he's going to be stupendous. An extremely lovely gentleman, and I like this. He was very kind to my family when my father passed away. He was a big fan of my dad's, actually. Now, you may know this or you may not know this already, but Peter Capaldi ran his own Doctor Who fan club in the 1970s, and although there was an official Doctor Who fan club run by Keith Miller, Peter Capaldi apparently tried to take it over. There's an amusing little... It's quite amusing that like this great actor was kind of this Doctor Who fan club. That he's a mad Doctor Who fan. He's not just a Doctor Who fan. He's a mad Doctor Who fan.
Well, like Russell T. Davis before him, and David Tennant as well.
I think he out tenants Tennant, to be honest with you.
Well, yeah, I think he does out tenant Tennant. But I'm not sure they totally out Davis is Davis.
No, I don't think so. No, that would be tough.
I think that would be quite a strong fight.
Yeah.
Between the two.
Yeah. Yes.
Exactly. Do you see Sean Pertwee on The Musketeers on Sunday?
Ah, well, do you know, I haven't watched any of The Musketeers yet.
All right, I see.
No, this isn't because I don't want to watch it. It's just because other things happen on Sunday evening, so I haven't got around to watching it.
I don't want to
know. No, it's nothing like that.
I don't even want to know that. The absence of that still indicates that, so I don't want to know that either.
But they have them on BBC iPlayer for the next 6 days, so we're going to attempt to...
You be careful, I've done that before, and you think you're safe, and you're not, and you miss the last bit, the last episode, which is carried on iPlayer at the same time as the episode one is.
I'm pretty certain it'll pop up on Netflix or Amazon.
It's very good, but yeah, Sean Pertwee's in the final episode, donning heavy eyeliner, strangely, which was a bit confusing, but
right.
Yeah, he was in the last episode of that, and of course, alongside Peter Capaldi, though, he didn't share any scenes.
Right. Okay.
Yes, a scary blend, Sean Pertwee, of John Pertwee and
his mother?
Patrick Troughton.
Oh, I see what you mean, right, yeah.
There's a sort of bit of Troughton in there. Now, I don't know whether that is because he is like his second mother, I don't know. I mean, stranger things have happened, like Time of the Rani.
That is true, yeah, absolutely true. Okay.
Let that sink in.
Do you listen to the Chris Evans Breakfast Show?
No.
You don't strike me as the sort of person who does.
No. I got bored of him in 1987.
In fact, to be honest, I probably don't think anyone who does. Or no one who admits to it, anyway.
Why?
Well, Paul McGann was on there on Friday.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Him again.
It was a reasonable question. I wasn't just, you know.
Seemed pretty unreasonable to me.
Yeah, we're probably best not talk too much about Chris Evans, although he does, of course, have a strong Doctor Who link, having been married to Billy Piper.
Absolutely, I was thinking just that.
Were you really?
I was. Well, I was thinking, you know, Chris Evans, we do have a link there, Billy Piper.
Yes.
So indeed. I was thinking the same thing, I just thought I should relay it, just to make sure you knew it was true. What about, you've gone quiet, have you hit mute?
Beg your pardon. Has Paul McGann worked with Peter Capaldi on Doctor Who? McGann says, not yet. On the Chris Evans radio show on Friday, he was asked if he'd worked with Peter Capaldi on Doctor Who, and he said, not yet. He actually said, no, not yet. So perhaps it is being considered. It's difficult to say. Do you think he'll come back? Well, I mean, we've talked about this at length previously.
Yeah,
haven't we? I can't actually remember whether it was just between me and you or whether it was on the podcast.
No, I've done it on two podcasts now. I've waffled on, and surprisingly, right. Have very little interest in it, which I thought.
Yes.
I thought was...
Well, you say that, but I've seen on Facebook today that people are touting it as an April Fool.
Right. Okay.
Which is interesting.
The idea of Paul McGann
on in a BBC Three online. Or specifically an online Doctor Who spin-off, yeah.
How could that be? That can't be for April Fool. It was mooted last month. That's,
yes, I know, yeah.
That doesn't make sense. Not only... That makes them the April Fool.
I never understood that rule.
Absolutely. Maybe they are actually playing the April Fool.
Maybe they are.
April Fooling us with this April Fool. I don't know. But no, I mean, I think it's definitely a tenable thing at the moment. I mean, yeah. It was... Not just simply on the whole fan idea, wouldn't it be great for McGann to come back, but the fact that that BBC Three is genuinely looking for a decent flagship to promote the channel. And McGann's iPlayer appearance was a major hit for iPlayer, so it's a very good example of an online production doing very well for the BBC. So while I'm not saying it's definite, I'm saying there's definitely the components there to pull it together if they went down that avenue. So I don't think it should be ignored or even lauded. I think it's a very tenable thing. How it would work, or whether it would be good, or whether really there is the money to do an online Doctor Who thing, it depends on what their budget is, I guess, and how they approach it. But,
yeah.
I mean, the thing is, if they did it, it would have to be something in its own right. It wouldn't be just, as suggested, like something that just fills in for Doctor Who or helps support the main show. BBC Three would be trying to do a Doctor Who spin-off on its own right. I don't know how they'd do that, to be honest, without stepping on the toes of the main one.
Yeah.
Maybe they would do something in the Time War, or maybe it would be something called Time War or approach like that.
Time War.
That would be a way to do it, wouldn't it? Because it would get confusing to have Doctor Who and then also Doctor Who.
Yeah, I think it would confuse some people. Yeah, I think the viewing public at large would be confused by. But then again, I mean, which of the viewing public at large were confused by The Night of the Doctor? The vast majority of them won't have watched it. So, keeping it online is definitely the answer, I should think.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting. I mean, it's something that sounds really good on paper, but there are definite obstacles, especially as I say from a PR point of view.
Yeah.
I would think if it was done, it wouldn't be called Doctor Who. I don't think you could call it Doctor Who. I think it would just be a mess to you know, a PR mess. Mm. So what would they do it on? And if it's going to be the Doctor, it'd have to be something else. So maybe it is untenable. I don't know. If it did include the Doctor, maybe the own focus would have to be something quite specific to make it a mini series. Like, as I say, like Gallifrey or Time War, maybe even something more down to earth before the Time War. Something that is literally on earth, going back to the unit thing, because again, that is something that is possibly a little more easy to finance.
Like a modern unit.
Yeah, a modern
unit. Like Torchwood.
Like Torchwood, yes. they could go down there, couldn't they?
Well, you know, I wouldn't rule that out, to be honest with you, if they don't.
No, seriously, no, I would not rule it out either. I think at the moment, from what I understood, there was interest in Doctor Who as a franchise. That's not to say that they were talking about bringing Paul McGann back. The only person who's been talking about bringing Paul McGann back has been Paul McGann, even though he's been doing it very politely and not in a way that is that he feels that he's stepping on Peter Capaldi's toes. But McGann, the iPlayer factor is what makes McGann seem tenable, but you may want to look at maybe Torchwood. The only thing I would say they might not do Torchwood is that I would think, I get the impression the branding is to do new stuff that is linked to stuff. Right. Stuff. And I think Torchwood is very much a flagship of the old BBC Three. So
they
may be wanting to try and steer into a new, fresh direction.
Maybe they could do Torchwood Legacy. Oh, hang on. No, someone's doing that already, aren't they? Ryan Terranova.
So, no, I mean, I think they would possibly do something Earth-based if it was Doctor Who. I think they'd be mad to attempt anything else without it starting to become look under budget.
Well, the BBC is one thing. If anything, the BBC is mad, as they've demonstrated many, many times before. So.
But then at the same time, as I say, they've said this recently, I think, at a press conference, that their focus is fewer, bigger, better, or something. I can't remember what the actual tagline is.
Yeah.
But the whole idea is that they're spending their budget on a smaller selection of shows which are high quality. So that would be the reason why you could say Doctor Who would work in some form or another, because it wouldn't be done like a cheap mini episode. It would be done as a proper production, as you get on any TV show or on Amazon or on any of Netflix. So it would have a certain quality to it. I think that's important. I think I've heard people talk about it. They seem to be thinking BBC Three would be doing like 5-minute mini episodes, and it wouldn't be. If they were going to do it, it'd be done like a show.
Yeah,
that's what they're.
I think we're talking kind of like Netflix sort of.
Yes, exactly. That's the model they're going for. It's not the mini episode thing. So, yes, I think it would depend largely on how that would budget and how that would work within the framework of the whole franchise. So, it's all very interesting. As I say, I think people are going to start talking about it more and more as BBC Three becomes more and more realised.
Yeah. It will be interesting to see how it all develops. And it would be nice to see some new comedy, some new decent comedies, not some. What on BBC Three? Again, when it first started, things would start on BBC Three, then they would move, like Gavin and Stacey. I never took to that, but I know that it was well written, whereas some of the comedies that they've had on BBC Three more recently haven't been that well written. And have gone. There's a lot of comedy at the moment that goes for the obvious. And the obvious laughs, and the obvious lines, and the obvious gags, and doesn't set things up well. And if you don't set things up well, then you can't get a good gag out of it. You can't get a good line from it. So it would be good to get some good, decent quality comedy back on the BBC. Not to say there is no good comedy on the BBC, because there is some, but there isn't as much as there could be and there should be. That's my humble opinion. We have 3 viewers, James McLean.
We have.
And
we're sort of winding down a bit.
I know, yeah. And why
are you here? Why are you not doing something else? Why are you not at work?
We're down to 2 now. You've just got rid of one.
Oh, I can get it down to 1.
Oh, we're back to 3 again.
We're back to 3.
Yes. This turns into a thing, you know. When you run a website, dear viewer, dear listener, you start obsessing over statistics as to who's watching you, who's reading. It can be quite unhealthy. So I'm going to.
You're getting boring. You're going to lose them.
But what I was saying, it can be unhealthy. So we'll stop doing that now and move on to the recommendations that we're going.
I think you've missed something we should talk very briefly about, since it was a big article. But it was a bit of a traffic hit on the website. Was the sonic screwdriver?
Oh, the sonic screwdriver. Yes, of course, the sonic screwdriver. Peter Capaldi's 12th Doctor sonic screwdriver, which we talked about at length yesterday. And
I told you, you can't help it, you prefix it. They don't know that, they don't care.
They don't know, they don't care, but I've forgotten virtually everything we've spoken about, so that's quite good. So there's a video clip of the 12th Doctor recorded by a fan with his video phone or digital camera or whatever, who turned up to a location shoot, and the Doctor's got his sonic screwdriver. And it looks similar to the 11th Doctor's, but isn't identical.
Hmm. It looks like the end's different, the
yes.
top end.
Yes.
And as we said, Brian, so see, I'm doing it now. As Brian said the other week, you know, the Smith screwdriver was very fragile.
And, yes.
So it does look a bit like it's a more sturdy version thereof, without the clamps and yes. without. It doesn't look like it's got the light going through the middle of it, which apparently was the problem. So people are still arguing about whether it is just a bad shot and it is actually the 11th Doctor's screwdriver, or whether it's a stunt prop and it's the 11th Doctor's. But I think it's just a slightly modified.
Yeah, it would make sense, wouldn't it? Why would they keep it?
Well, and they're used to doing it. They did it with the McGann to the Hurt Doctors. They've done it with the changeover between the 9th and the 10th Doctors. So, yeah, it's a nice, cheap and easy way to reinforce change your product, and it's another thing to merchandise. So I'm sure it is definitely
Just modify it slightly. Yeah. Makes sense. Although I do remember something. Wouldn't it be great if there was a Jackson Lake Sonic Screwdriver kit merchandise with one of these and a hot air balloon as a TARDIS?
It's Sonic. I'm surprised they haven't done it, to be honest.
I am surprised they haven't done it, actually. It would make perfect sense. They've merchandised crapper stuff than that.
Well, that's it, exactly. Then.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Do you ever get that thing where you... I'm never that taken by them online, probably because I can't sort of reach out and pick them up or whatever. But you, do you ever get that thing when you go on a Forbidden Planet or insert name of toy shop here and you see the Doctor Who figures, like the classic era figures, like the Legopolis one or the Pyramid of Mars, and you say, oh, I could really buy that and tell, I'm going to play with it now.
Yeah, but you see, the thing is you get these sort of things, you take them out of the box, and then you look at it, and you just stare at it, because that child is no longer there. He's no longer able to do what you know he would be able to do, and it's a horrible feeling. It's a feeling of, sort of, I don't know, it's like childhood impotence, and you can't deliver.
I bought a couple of Transformers a few years ago, and I can't remember what the range was called, but they were kind of stylized into the old... cartoon series look. I had Ultra Magnus and I had Thundercracker, and they're poseable, so they look, when they transform, they look like the originals, but when they're in the robot mode, they're more poseable than the originals were, and they looked really good, and I spent about 5 minutes playing with them, and I never played with them again.
It's just
now 20 years before that, I was like building, I would spend an hour redesigning my bedroom at home in order to create some sort of proto Cybertron for massive combats to take place.
It's sad because I mean, I remember when I was a kid, I mean, this one thing that I take from this conversation is the frustration I get with how good the toys are now, because my Optimus Prime, when I was a kid, I was always deeply frustrated it didn't look like the cartoon version, didn't have the slight curve to the hips. It was just a sort of straight, and the way that the animated version didn't have wheels on his thighs, and it was you know, far more streamlined and far more powerful. And then you saw the one that came out a few years ago, which just was that. And it's the same with Star Wars, and as you say, the Doctor Who stuff. You know, when we were kids, we said many times before, there wasn't anything apart from a few books. You know, we were caught between the generations of Dennis Fisher and DePaul.
Yeah, so, and here's the fourth Doctor. Thanks, DePaul. That really looks like...
I know, and it's like, that was awful, and that was... But now the stuff is, you know, pretty fantastic. So yeah, it's a great show. I mean, the only thing I do take pleasure in is they still haven't done any toy console rooms for the classic series yet. So I think I'd have loved that as a kid.
Not yet.
Rather than the five-sided thing that they did for DePaul as well.
Yeah, well, we've got the Lego thing, haven't we? We've got this Lego possibility.
Yeah.
Which would probably pop up in there. Okay, so recommendations. Do you want to do yours first?
Well, my recommendation, I'm going to go very quickly this week, is going to be for the Ice Warriors, because I think it's a very good example of Derek Martinez's superb direction. Okay. A lot of great shots in there, especially the ice caverns. So I'd say go and watch that.
Good recommendation. I'm going to go with the Tom Baker stuff. It's now out on Kindle. Tom Baker's autobiography, Who on Earth is Tom Baker? And The Boy Who Kicked Pigs, the story of the wonderfully named Robert Caligari, which evokes all sorts of noir-y German expressionist sort of angles, and the illustration within kind of also echoes that. It's kind of a combination of Quentin Blake from their Roald Dahl books and only turned up to kind of gothic extremes, and it's all done in black ink as well, which makes it even darker. It's described on the front cover as a grotesque masterpiece. It's worth reading. If you don't have it already, it's now on Kindle, so you can grab it. If Kindle is something you don't have, or you might have it actually, because you might have a mobile phone that has a Kindle app, so you could use that, or you could use a Kindle on your desktop, or you could just buy the book as well. Do that! At least then you've got something you can pick up and read in the bath. You wouldn't read it Kindle in the bath, would you? You certainly wouldn't take your smartphone in the bath, would you? I wouldn't.
I wouldn't say.
No, I wouldn't. It's too expensive. It's too great a risk. Dear viewers and listener, We're edging towards the end of this week's Casterbris podcast / vidcast with a K. I'm interested to know if we've got any comments. I'm just going to do a quick check. We had some comments, but they're not particularly relevant, unfortunately, to anything we've discussed, which is a bit of a shame. Well, not to be... it's not completely a surprise, given the length of time we had to prepare and announce this. We weren't able to build up to it as we have previous podcasts. Thank you for tuning in, though, dear listener. I'd like to thank James for not berating me too hard for the problem with the recording. I still don't know what it is. It makes fascinating listening. Yeah, very strange. And we will be back next week. I'm not sure what format we'll be in, but we will be back. Until then, bye-bye.